Good morning, everybody. How are you? Good? Fair? Well, after this service, you're going to be smarter than you've ever been regarding technology and its impact on your family. I'm so glad that you're here. I want to remind you of something. Our young people are cooking pancakes, and people have been eating pancakes all morning, making donations to send kids away to summer camp. They have more pancakes than they have people to eat them. So if you develop a hunger after this service, you can slip right into the community room, and whether you donate or not, grab as many pancakes as you want. They wanted me to tell you that. Also, when we are finished today, there are loads of these CDs on the table in the middle of the lobby. Perhaps you saw them when you came in. After you hear what you're going to hear today, this is going to highly interest you. So I encourage you to pick one of these up. We've made this possible for you so you can take home and have bibliographies and books and articles as well as website links. Today we are in the smack dab middle of a 7-part series of messages entitled Unplugged. Now, I've been telling you every week that while I may not be on the cutting edge of technology and may be considered the last person to lead a discussion like this, I am, however, very, very concerned as to technology's impact on our lives, on our marriages, on our families, and today there'll be special emphasis on our children, okay? It is not my goal to convince you to smash your smartphone with a hammer. I would never do that. I use technology every day of my life, and it benefits me greatly. However, the purpose of a series like this is simply to get you to pause, stop for a minute, and think about the impact technology is having on you, your family, your relationship, and especially today, your children. Maybe you saw this a couple of weeks ago, maybe you didn't, but I wanted to share it with you today. Technology is increasing. It is accelerating faster than we can keep up with it. What I'm about to show you is the newest thing from Google. If you use Google or have a Google Assistant, you know that it can manage your calendar for you, your messages for you. Well, now it can do something even better than that. Google Assistant, using the technology known as Google Duplex, you can Google that later, Google Duplex can now make appointments for you, not just online, but literally by making a phone call to a live human being. Now, what I'm about to show you is Google Duplex making a phone call for someone like me or someone like you to set up a hair appointment, and the person you'll hear on the other end is a live person working in the hair salon, and she has no idea she's talking to a computer, okay? Check this out.
Hello, how can I help you?
Hi, I'm calling to book a women's haircut for a client. I'm looking for something on May 3rd.
Sure, give me 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, what time are you looking for around?
At 12 p.m.
We do not have a 12 p.m. available. The closest we have to that is a 1:15.
Do you have anything between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m.?
Depending on what service she would like, what service is she looking for?
Just a woman's haircut for now.
Okay, we have a 10 o'clock.
10 a.m. is fine.
Okay, what's her first name?
The first name is Lisa.
Okay, perfect. So I will see Lisa at 10 o'clock on May 3rd.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Great. Have a great day. Bye.
Now, you understand there was nothing scripted about that. That happened live. You saw it in real time. It was recorded. And the person at the hair salon has no idea that she's just engaged with artificial intelligence known as Google Duplex. That's fascinating to me. The voice recognition software in my smartphone enables me to send text messages much more efficiently than if I had to do it with these giant thumbs, you see? You have to double check it. You have to proofread it sometimes. Otherwise, you might send a profane message to someone in the church congregation. That wouldn't go over very well. But this is how fast this is progressing. One day you will be able to tell your phone, Google Assistant, make me a hair appointment for 10 o'clock on Wednesday morning, and they'll take care of it. Now, the purpose of today is to bring two experts before the church. The first is Paulette Smith. Paulette has been a part of this ministry and this church from the very beginning, back in the 1995-96. She's married to Jonathan Smith, who's one of our board members. Both her children, Polly and Will, grew up in this ministry. She graduated from Emory with a Bachelor of Science degree in psychology. She went on to then get her master's in educational counseling with a special emphasis and a special interest and focus on the development of a child's brain. So I've been looking forward to this service now for about 2 months since we first started kicking this around. Today, Paulette is going to help you as parents understand the impact that technology, primarily smartphones, iPads, television, computer screens, is having on the brain of your child, okay? We are so blessed to have her on staff as our administrator. I want to invite her up. Would you give her a hand so make her feel comfortable?
I want to reiterate what Pastor Mike said. My purpose today is not to bash technology or to guilt you into feeling really bad about how you parent your child and when you hand them a tablet or let them watch TV for a long time. My purpose today is to just, I just peruse the new research because I was interested in technology and brain development. And I just want to get that out there to you to make you more aware of what research is finding out about technology. First, I want to briefly describe what we know about the infant's brain. Babies and toddlers produce synapses like crazy. Synapses are the spaces between neurons that they're pathways that information goes all over our brain. Babies and toddlers produce even more synapses than they'll ever need or use. So as they experience the world, stimuli comes in, it crosses over these synapses, and they grow from 2,500 per neuron in infants to over 15,000 per neuron in 2 and 3 year olds. Well, a 3 year old may have 15,000 neurons synapses per neuron, but these are double what we find in your adult brain. So they have more than they're ever going to use. So what happens in preschool in the following years, the baby's brain starts a pruning process with synapses where they keep the ones that are being strengthened and used often, and they even use them more. They get stronger. They're strengthened. And they prune the ones that are never used. They fall off. So really, children are using their experiences to strengthen or prune all these overproduced synapses so that by the time you're 20, your brain is very organized and these synapses are very in place, the ones that you're going to use in adulthood. So the effects of technology on brain development are interesting because which synapses are being used when a child is dealing with technology? Because if they're dealing with a lot of them, that synapse is getting really, really strong. And then if they're dealing with, if technology is causing a lot of synapses to fire, then which ones are being pruned? What's being left out? So the research finds that there's benefits and costs, that there's good development and bad development associated with technology. It depends on the frequency, the medium you use, the quality, but they are finding benefits and costs. What I loved was I read a statement that says, at least in the early years of a child's life, the power to dictate your child's relationship with technology lies with you. It rests with you. You get to do that. Let's look at the benefits of technology that research are finding. Technology improves hand-to-eye coordination. It increases reaction time so we can learn to make quick decisions. It improves school readiness if you're exposed to a lot of educational games. It can improve social skills if the technology is shared and children are learning to take turns using the screen. A child can get a broader worldview if he or she sees new places on the computer and then they have a positive virtual experience. Technology is a good motivator. It gives quick feedback and verbal praise. And then children have fun. They enjoy technology. They like the cause and effect that it makes them aware of. The major qualifier for most of these benefits, though, is this is all positive when used in with an adult to guide it. For example, watching a movie. A child, their brain lights up. Social intelligence synapses are on fire. If they watch a movie with an adult who is explaining to them the character's motives, the character's feelings, the moral of the story. This doesn't happen when a child sits in front of the TV and watches the movie alone. The positive is to do technology with adult guidance for small children. I think one of the biggest benefits, unless I'll be real honest here, is that technology preoccupies our children. Like, parents have a chance to focus on something else. You can go get something done. I mean, children who are in front of a screen, they're not at risk for injury. They're not unsafe or in a dangerous environment. They're quiet. There's no major mess being made that you have to go back and clean up, like when they're finger painting. And you don't have the chaos and the noise. And as the grandmother of two young boys that I keep once in a while, it's nice. I want to focus now on some of the research that's just coming out. You got to realize technology is advancing faster than the research can keep up with it. And so it's just coming out in the past 10 years of some harm that technology can do to a developing brain. Let's put that list up there. Children who spend lots and lots of time with technology, the researchers agree that these children may have weak muscle development and problems with gross motor movements that lead to obesity and diabetes. They have reduced concentration levels. They have poor or delayed language development. They have a limited capacity for imagination and creativity. They have a constant need for instant gratification. They become very impatient, impulsive, and unable to wait their turn. They fail to develop problem-solving skills. They become less social and more isolated. This one's scary to me. If you are learning as you grow up as a young child to text more than you're learning developing language, how to have a conversation, then you're missing things like tone of voice, facial cues on the person's face you're talking to. You don't realize how your words are affecting their feelings. Therefore, it's hard to learn empathy. You don't have a broad range of vocabulary. And just think of the implications for this as a teenager graduates from college and they go for an interview to get a job. Or they want to date and meet the spouse that they're going to marry. The next one is they fail to be able to calm themselves or self-soothe. This is all of us as parents of infants know that that's one of the qualities we want our babies to have is to be able to go to bed at night, be able to go for a car ride, be able to wait in the doctor's office with us if it's a long wait, be able to self-soothe, be able to calm down if you get upset. Well, if your baby is crying and you hand them a cell phone screen or an iPad, instead of teaching them to self-soothe, you're giving them the most stimulating thing in the house. And our brains love to be stimulated. So we're finding that technology is an addiction. We like it and we eat it up. So that's a concern. The next one is we become addicted to the stimulation that technology provides. Also, children can come across inappropriate content that does not coincide with your family's values. Chad's going to speak about that later. I wanted to say, especially for teenagers, I found this was very interesting. Teenagers who are who overly use technology can become immersed in simulated satisfaction. That's like a teenager playing a game of archery on the computer and they win. They get lots of points. And they pat themselves on the back and they feel good about themselves. But it doesn't mean that they can get up and walk outside and pick up a bow and arrow and suddenly they're a good archer. So children are learning that the real world doesn't satisfy them or make them as happy as their world on the screen. This is troubling for, like, if a teenager faces problems in the real world. Instead of learning how to cope with those, they're retreating back to the computer and using it to cope because it's more satisfying, their simulated environment. Also, teenagers can be exposed to cyberbullying. They're actually linking teenage depression with social media. The more a child's on social media, they start comparing themselves to everybody. I'm not that pretty. I don't have that many friends. And that's depressing. And then they fail to develop healthy sleep patterns. Teenagers are losing sleep due to technology. So, I mean, what are we supposed to do? What are you supposed to do? Technology is here. It's in their culture. It's in their environment. They're going to face it. They're going to have a relationship with it. You've got to help them determine what that is. One of the things that researchers suggest is you got to limit the time that your child spends by themselves with technology. The American Pediatric Association recommends zero screen time for infants and babies under the age of 2. They recommend that children between the ages of 2 and 6 should have at the most 1 hour per day of screen time alone by themselves. For children older than 6, it's up to parents to decide how much is too much for their individual child. But always keep in mind that the screen time with a child is positive if you are there with them sharing it. Another thing you can do is on your tablets and iPads, you can download apps that are about coloring, sorting, counting, spelling, academic subjects to help them get ready for school. Play with your child. Play cards, play board games, cook together, work puzzles, play outdoors with a ball, visit a green space if you don't have a backyard. Tell stories, read books, hug, roughhouse, and converse together. And let these activities predominate in your home a lot more than TV, video games, iPads, and smartphones. Back in the 80s, when I was learning about brain development, these same 4 experiences were considered needed for healthy brain development. And they are movement, touch, human connection, and exposure to nature. So for those synapses to strengthen, you want experiences coming from these 4 areas. If your child is well balanced and getting experiences in these 4 areas, yeah, sure, throw in the technology. But if technology is replacing, like experiences in front of a screen are replacing these 4 areas, then your child may be at risk for not developing the necessary synapses they need in their brains to become happy, healthy adults. A little sidebar here. Children also have problems in brain development if they're trying to access a parent who is overly engaged in technology. So parents who always talk to their child with a cell phone in hand, with the TV on, with the laptop or tablet open, they also are seeing that those children are suffering in their relational time with their parents. Research is showing the same things I learned in college in the 80s, like I said, that optimal brain development depends mostly on these 4 critical experiences. But I ran across some studies in my reading and actually found a book that new brain research, and it's very exciting to me, is showing that children are born with the innate capacity for spirituality, just as they are born with the capability to learn a language and think. Spirituality in these studies was measured as a deep spiritual connection with a sense of a sacred, unseen world. So that's exciting to me, that even brain search is backing up what I know, that adding spiritual experience to the list, spiritual connectedness to the list, is going to empower our children's brains. We can encourage a personal relationship with God. We can teach meditation and prayer. And then along with conversing and playing and hugging and reading, we can have the biggest impact and influence on the health and well-being of our children.
Thank you, Paulette. Now, earlier I showed you a video where Google Duplex made a hair appointment. Now we're going to change gears, and let's say that I want to make a reservation at a restaurant, a Chinese restaurant, authentic Chinese food, but let's say it's such a small restaurant that you can't make those reservations online. You actually have to call the restaurant. Google Duplex can do that as well. Now, what you're going to see is the same scenario. You'll hear artificial intelligence voice on the left. You'll hear the actual restaurant owner on the right. Listen to how capable Google Duplex is when it's difficult to follow the conversation because of a heavy accent. Watch this.
See how may I hear you?
Hi, I'd like to reserve a table for Wednesday the 7th.
For 7 people?
It's for 4 people.
4 people? When?
Next Wednesday at 6 p.m.
Oh, actually, we live here for like after like 5 people. For 4 people, you can come.
How long is the wait usually to be seated?
For when, tomorrow or weekday or?
For next Wednesday, the 7th.
Oh, no, it's not too busy. You can come for 4 people, okay?
Oh, I gotcha. Thanks.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Amazing, isn't it? Many years ago, the Reinbold family came to our church. They've been attending Grace since about 17, 18 years now. All three of their children, Chad, his wife Maria, and then Christian, CJ, and Faith, they've come up in this ministry. I've had the privilege of baptizing their whole family. Chad has been responsible for all of our Wi-Fi and all the technology in this building, including our website development, since the very beginning. He has been extremely helpful to me personally. And I'm grateful to have him come this morning. In 2005, he went out on his own and established SCS, which is Superior Computer Services, which is, Internet Management, Managed Service Provider. Sorry, there we go. And I've asked him to come today. Most of you are unaware and would be shocked to know how often the subject of extramarital relationships via cell phones, text messaging, or the internet, and pornography come up in my office. Very often when there's a moral failure in a relationship, it typically began with the use of a smartphone and smartphone technology via instant messaging or text messaging. And very often I've had many conversations with men in our church that are struggling to overcome an actual addiction to pornography. So Chad, come on up here. Everybody make Chad feel welcome.
All right, just like I said at the last service, I'm a lot more nervous right now than I am when I'm back there playing the drums, so this might shake the whole time I'm up here, but we're going to talk just a little bit more this morning than about porn. A lot of times when I start talking to families and parents about porn, a lot of them tune out because maybe their kids are too young, they think. Maybe they say that they can trust their kids with that kind of thing, or maybe their kids, you know, don't use the computer that often. I mean, that kind of thing. So I'm going to cover a little bit more than that to make sure that hopefully everyone will be able to get something out of this. So what exactly is the internet? To me, the internet is just a tool. It's something that you can use for good things. You can use it for business. You can use it for studying, for school, writing a paper, that kind of thing. And then you can also use it for other stuff. Like, how many people in here, show of hands, would use a hammer to paint a wall? All right, well, the internet's the same way. If you use it for the right thing, it'll give you the right result. So we've got the first slide up here, and I'm going to use that iceberg right there as the internet. And the part that sticks out of the top, next slide, that's the visible web. So out of all the internet that's out there, 6% of it is the part that we see on a daily basis. Facebook, YouTube, Netflix, all of that is in the visible web at the top. The next part down is the deep web. Everybody's familiar with that. It's just that you can't see that on a regular basis. You can't go to Google and surf Georgia Southern's financial systems. But if you have a student there, you can go in there and you can pay their student bill. So everybody's familiar with the center part. That'd be your hospital, doctor's office, banking, Department of Motor Vehicles, all that kind of stuff. That's the deep web. There's about 90% of that. Then we get to the bottom. The bottom is the dark web. Now, for this talk right here, I surfed the dark web just to see what was out there and see if all the stuff that I've heard about is true. And in just about an hour, I found anything that you could imagine, and it was for free. Getting there was free. There's hitmen that advertise out there. You can hire someone to kill someone for you. I can buy cocaine, heroin, pills, download child porn. I mean, all of that is accessible free without any trying. I mean, like I just installed one thing and I was able to surf all that stuff. Credit cards. I can go out there for $5, I can buy someone's credit card. And I would be willing to bet that I could look up everybody's name here on the dark web and do a search, and someone's credit card information is going to show up down there. So, how much of the internet is actually out there? Well, Google says that right now there's about 30 trillion unique pages on the internet. That's the visible web that you see. That's the top part. And about how much of that is porn? Between 4 and 28%, I couldn't find any solid, you know, middle of the road thing. So between 4 and 28%. But what is that? What does that give us as far as totals are concerned? Well, if it's 4%, that's 1.2 trillion pages of porn. And if it's 8% or 28%, that's 8.4 trillion pages. Now, that is explicit porn. That is, the site is trying to get you to come there to look at porn. That's not someone posting some naked pictures. That's not someone reposting someone else's naked pictures. That is porn for sale or for free. All right, so let's have this group, if we can. Can everyone in this section stand up? Okay, give or take, that's about 25 to 28% of the room. I mean, if I'm a couple off, that's fine. But here's what is the same thing that what we're looking at right here with this section over here. What I want everybody to do for the hour that they're here at church, I want you to not accidentally bump into someone over here in this section for an hour. Is that possible for everybody here to not see them, not hear them, not bump into them by accident in the church for an hour? Okay, you can sit down now, thanks. That's 1 hour. How many hours are you on the internet every week? Do you think that you're going to run into that 8.4 trillion pages at least once by accident? Probably. So how much are people actually going to those 8.4 trillion sites or pages? Well, porn sites get more visitors each month than Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter combined. All right, how many people go to those three sites on a weekly basis, daily basis? I mean, probably everyone in here. Netflix, they have a deal with Adam Sandler. Who all has seen an Adam Sandler movie? I'm sure that's just about everybody. Just Adam Sandler movies on Netflix have gotten over 1 billion hits. Just his movies. So you can imagine how much more those porn sites. I mean, I go to Amazon probably every day. There's all kinds of stuff on there, you know, videos, music. You buy stuff, I mean, just about anything for your home. So everyone puts in place protections for their homes and their businesses. What I want you to do is raise your hand if you qualify for any of these. Does anyone have, at either their home or their business, an alarm system? Does anybody have a fence? Window locks? Door locks? Security cameras? Gates? Car alarms, a key for your door. I mean, we could go on and on and on. I think if we have that list and everybody raised their hand and kept it up, there wouldn't be a hand in here that would be up, or that would still be down, right? All right, so can I pick on someone for a second? Can I pick on you, JJ? All right, what would you say at your home or your business is your most valuable possession?
My family.
Very good answer. That's very good. Only reason I picked on you is I know you have a lot of big equipment. You might have said something like that. But most people would answer something like, you know, my car or, you know, a piece of farm equipment, a tractor or something like that. And I'm glad that you said that. How come we spend so much money, so much time, and so much effort on all of that security for our possessions when we're gone? I mean, all those things are in place to protect your property so that people don't break in and steal your stuff. They don't break in and damage your home. How come we spend that much time and effort on all that stuff and we don't do the same thing for our families, for our minds, for our marriage? I mean, how much, everybody here, how much have you put into all of that versus protecting your family? Now, I know that some of that stuff is there to protect your family, but you put it there for when you're gone, that nothing happens to that. All right, can I use another person? Another volunteer? Yeah, come on. All right, we're going to pretend, this is an analogy that I use for my kids. We're going to pretend that Satan is standing right outside this door right now, okay? And he's knocking. He wants to come in. Do you open up the door?
No.
Are you sure?
No, sir.
Okay, I'm going to put a chain lock up here, okay? And I'm going to put the chain on there, and he knocks on the door again. You know for sure, without a doubt, that he's standing outside that door. Do you crack the door just a little bit, just to make sure? You know there's a chain there, right?
No.
You sure?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. If we're not going to crack that door, and we know for sure what's sitting outside that door, then why would we do the same thing with our computers and our mobile devices? Crack that door so that kind of stuff can get in. Why wouldn't we put the same kind of protection? I mean, if I knew that Satan was at that door, I wouldn't be in this room. The door would be boarded up, chains, padlocks, everything you can imagine. So if we would do that for that door, knowing what's there, why don't we do the same thing with our computers and our mobile devices, knowing that that stuff's there? In my opinion, to protect your family and your marriage against this stuff, it takes more than just putting something in place and leaving it sit there. Our company installed a security system here in town, 50-something cameras this last couple weeks, and we didn't just install a camera and then leave it, like just plug the camera in and walk away. You plug the camera in and you aim it, and then you go inside the vault or wherever the closet is and you make sure it shows up on the TV correct. You make sure that's in focus. You make sure it covers the area that they want it to cover. Then, a couple months later, you check and make sure it's still working. You might have to clean off the lens, so it requires maintenance. Well, it's the same thing with this kind of stuff. Protecting your family and your computer, your family from the stuff that's on the computers and mobile devices requires maintenance. It's not something that you can just put in place and leave it there. So I'm gonna go through a list of a couple things. Now, this list is pretty long, but it's also on that CD, the entire list. The first thing that I would recommend is an app called 360. You can put that on your mobile phones. We have that on every one of our phones, and our kids will not be allowed to have a phone unless they have it on there. It shows where they're at. It shows how fast they're driving. It shows how fast they accelerated, how fast they braked. It tells us if they've turned their mobile phone off. They just won't have a phone unless they have that. I'm the one that pays the bill for the phone, so they're not going to have a phone unless they have that app on there. Another thing that we have is called Tile. I'm sure everybody's familiar with that. It's a little chip. I don't have it with me. We put that in all of our vehicles. So if our kids leave home and forget their phone, well, then we can still know exactly where their vehicle is going and when it gets there. Being alone with the opposite sex, I won't do that. I won't be in a situation where I'm with the opposite sex where anything could happen or anything would be implied that would happen. Leaving a computer out in the open. Don't have a computer that's in a room that someone can go in, opposite side of the house, no one can hear what's going on, you can shut the door. Computers should be out in the open. If it's a laptop, then they need to sit out in front of everybody. Kids don't have their own passwords. Who's the one paying for the device? The kids should give up all their passwords to everything until it's their computer and they're paying for it and they're on their own. Don't let your kids use your friends' computers when they're over at their friend's house. Do they put the same protections in place that you do? Do they care the same way in watching what their kids are looking at? Same thing when kids come over to our house, they're not allowed to get on our Wi-Fi because I'm not going to be responsible for something that they don't block on their phone and they surf on my internet. Men, I'm going to pick on you just a little bit. XXX Church app, that's an app that you can put on your computer. It follows everything that you look at, and then it sends it to an accountability partner. Full disclosure of passwords to your wife. I give my wife every password that I have to anything. She's allowed to pick up any device anytime she wants, take a look at it. I don't delete any of the texts. All the entire text chain stays there. She can look at any of it anytime she wants. She's involved in the setup of any device that we have so that she knows all the passwords and that she can block purchasing of movies or anything like that anytime that she wants. It's completely up to her. I let my wife know where I'm going, when I'm going, when I'm going to get back. I mean, I know that gets extreme, but I love it when I get home, and that's not something that she has to worry about. So if I come home and she's got a bad face, it's not because of something I did. Calling or texting, I call her or text her when I leave. I call her and text her when I'm leaving the place to come back. That way she knows about what time I should be getting back, and if something comes up, she calls me or I call her and say, you know, I got stuck in traffic or something like that. But if my phone dies, she knows about where I should be to know where to send someone or start looking if that happens. I don't even do side hugging or hugging of women outside of my family members. I don't want there to be any kind of question whatsoever. I mean, I've been involved in a small group now for 6 or 7 years here at the church and know these ladies really good, but I won't do that, not at all. And there's another person in the church that everyone knows, John Cook. He does these same exact things. And I didn't realize some of that until he talked to me after this last service. But I will be standing up front afterwards if anybody has any questions, and a lot of this information is in a lot more detail on the CD, but I appreciate everybody's time.
Fantastic. Thank you, Chad. Appreciate it. Isn't it refreshing to come to church and hear a father say, I pay the bills so the kids do what I tell them? Isn't that refreshing? You know, this politically correct culture we live in today, you know, you're not supposed to say things like that. Maybe that's a little out of bounds. As I told you earlier, Chad has been involved in my personal accountability since he's been a part of this church. Early on, when I learned what he was capable of, I said, Chad, you have access to all of the computers in this building. You pick them up, take them home, and clean them, check them, do whatever needs to be done at any time you wish, and it's been very helpful for me. Now, I told you the whole reason for this several weeks ago comes from Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23. Solomon wrote, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. That's what we've told you today, parents. Guard your child's heart above all else, their affections, their allegiances, their motivations, their desires. Guard that. Take charge of that, for that is what is going to determine the path of your child's life. As I told you, there is so much information here that will assist you. I hope you'll pick one of these up on your way out. God bless you. I'm glad you were here. How about a prayer? Father, thank you for Paulette and Chad. God, thank you for their love for you, their love for their families. Father, thank you for their commitment to their church, that they desire to assist us as we guard our hearts. God, I pray that you will strengthen parents. Don't let them be overwhelmed, Father. Strengthen those relationships between dads and teenagers, moms and teenagers, Father, that we can work together as a team, as a family, to navigate the waters that are out there. Father, protect this group. Protect us as we seek to protect our own hearts. We pray these things because of our faith in your Son, Jesus. Amen. God bless you, Grace Community Church. Fantastic to see you today. I'll see you next time.